How are you, Bonnie?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. It's really early for me to have beer because I didn't have breakfast. I didn't do as you did.
Yeah.
So you're prepared, which is great because that's the best way to have mezcal with a beer on the side. So welcome to Música y Mezcal.
Thank you for having me.
We're very happy to have you here. You are one of my favorite performers at Guilt. We both work at Guilt, or we three. Brandon also does this podcast, and he also works at Guilt, of course. And yeah, I just wanted to have you over and talk us about how you started. How did you get into like playing, you know, that style of music? Because it's very specific, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, like, does music run in your family?
Yes and no. So start from the beginning. My grandparents, on my mom's side are from the East Coast, and it's very musical kind of community. Mm-hmm. So my grandmother played piano, violin, and sang, and ukulele. She's kind of one of those people that would play anything she could get her hands on. My grandfather on that side plays guitar. I think that's kind of it. And he sings. And like as a little kid, they were always singing songs in the car, teaching us songs to sing in the car. My dad's side, my grandparents,
not really. They like music.
Yeah. They in their younger years go out to dances and stuff like that. My grandfather's brother had a band, and it was a dance band, and so they were involved in it in that way, but I don't think they really played a lot of music. However, the piano that I grew up playing is from my great-great-grandparents. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's like it kind of one side more than the other, but then the other side contributes different things.
Yeah.
Both my parents like played music as kids, but don't really as adults, and all my siblings like took music lessons or played in school programs as kids, but not really so much as adults. So I'm kind of like the cheese stands alone.
And how did you like, did you start playing piano or did you, okay, that was your first like instrument.
So because my grandmother played piano, when she would come over and babysit us, she would play us songs and get me to dance around and move to the music and feel it and all of that sort of stuff, which is really lovely. And then I guess as a little kid, the story goes that I would like reach up over the top of the piano and try and figure out how to play songs without being able to actually see the keys. And so my parents like, oh, we got to get her into music lessons. Put her on the bench where she can see.
Nice. I also had like a grandmother, like very influential in my like childhood, like maybe creativity, like creative side of myself. She would always be the one like to encourage me to do like whatever kind of artistic endeavor I would feel like. So I totally relate to that. And I'm very grateful for her because like...
Me too, yeah.
It's like really nice to have those like little nudges and pushes to that don't really judge you. Just it's more like... I'm going to push you and nudge you in the best way with a lot of love into something that you evidently like. And then how did you start playing? Because you play the, do you play other instruments? You play the trumpet.
Yeah.
But you do you play other instruments besides the piano and the trumpet?
I mean, I sing. The trumpet's kind of like my main thing. I can pick up some other brass instruments and, you know, after about an hour of playing with it, I can make some music. I play guitar and bass a little bit.
Okay.
Don't really perform on them. You know, it's more like songwriting tools.
More like, and how did you get into playing the trumpet?
So in, I guess, grade 7, when I started looking at what instruments I wanted to play for band program, because I knew I wanted to be in band because the high school band program in Chilliwack, the Chilliwack secondary one, really, really good. So in grade 7, I already knew like, oh, when I get into high school, I want to be able to do all of these things. So like, what instrument can I pick that will allow me to do the most stuff? And my aunt had played the trumpet, so there was already one at the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, like, it's kind of like the case is kind of bigger. Is it too big to carry around? I think this is going to be okay. And like all of my friends are picking like flutes and clarinets because they're tiny and they can fit in their backpacks and stuff like that. I'm like, I think this is worth carrying. I think this is worth it.
Like it's a little bit more inconvenient, like size wise.
Yeah.
Like when you're a kid.
Yeah. Because when you're a kid, like you get those like great big. And it was a vintage horn, like it was my aunt's from when she was in middle school, right? So it's like one of those great big wooden cases that are outlined and everything. And so you're like hauling around this heavy wooden case, little kid on the school bus.
And how did you decide, like, I really want to do this, like...
Well,
like seriously.
Yeah, so when I got into the Chilliwack Secondary Band Program, like I said, they had an amazing, and they still do have an amazing program. It's like they had steel drum ensemble with like a 10 or 11 piece rhythm section.
Wow.
It's like you don't see that in high school band programs ever. Like,
yeah.
Pretty amazing. And they had a handbell choir.
And in Chilliwack.
In Chilliwack, yeah. Yeah. Had a handbell choir. They had a rhythm and blues band. They had your normal like jazz bands and jazz choir and concert band and all of that stuff. But they also had a hot jazz ensemble,
nice.
Which is very unique, I think, for high school. It's usually like more modern. But because at that time and for many years before, they had a traditional jazz festival, hot jazz festival in Chilliwack. The school program kind of leaned into that and partnered with it a bit so that the school band would be able to perform at that. So I think throughout grade 10 and grade 11, that hot jazz ensemble performed quite a bit. In my grade 12 year, I think we played 100 gigs.
Wow.
Like the band teachers really cared a lot, and that's made such a big difference. They really cared a lot. They got us out performing, and there was this festival in California that we always would go to every year. So all of the gigs that we'd play would pay for us to take planes and hotel and everything for this trip to California. And so we were exposed to all of these professional musicians. And there were things like the Vancouver Traditional Jazz Society, which would sponsor us to go to these camps in California as well that focus specifically in traditional jazz. So all of that support really led me in that direction. And being exposed to all of these incredibly like world-class, high-end musicians playing this music really fostered that love of and desire to play this kind of music.
Wow. Like, I feel like, so you were already basically professional when you were like in middle school.
It,
if you
well,
like
high
more
school,
than
yeah.
100, like, or high school, yeah. If you were playing like more than 100 gigs, it's like, it's insane.
It's kind of crazy. Like, and you know, I have to give such credit to the band teachers because it took so much time out of their own home life and personal schedules to be supportive in that way, that they would be like, all right, Saturday, I've lined up 3 gigs for you. First, we're going to go like to the leisure center and there's an event there. So you're going to go perform for these people. And then at the Legion, there's this thing happening. So you're going to go play a set there for these people. And like, then we have this other thing at the hotel and we'll go and play. So like, they just really put a lot of effort into setting that up for us. And I think as that kind of became more aware in the community, people were like, oh, well, we have a thing for you. Oh, well, we have a thing for you. All these requests would come in, right? So I don't know if that's what they imagined when they first started pushing us to do these community performances, but they really like kind of took off and we were performing all of the time, like after school and yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And when did you start? Because I know you've been playing with Winston for like more than a decade. How did you guys like meet and start like let's make this hot jazz band happen?
Yeah, so I've been playing with Winston since 2007. So
wild.
Yeah, there's only two other musicians I've been playing with longer: Josh Roberts and Jens Christensen. So Josh is a wonderful guitar and banjo player that you'll see quite often at Gilt, and Jens, I've played it with Gilt a fair few times. He's a wonderful tenor saxophone player. He plays the clarinet in Company B jazz band. But both of those people I met when I was in grade 10. Josh was in the same high school as me, but 2 years ahead. So we would play in the after school ensemble, and I knew him that way. Jens, I met through this wonderful trumpet player named Simon Stribling, and had this half big band kind of thing that would perform like once a week at the Burnaby Golf Course. So my parents, like, because I didn't have a keyboard at that time, they would rent this keyboard and like drive me in from Chilliwack all the way to Burnaby so I could play with this professional band. Wow. And that's how I met Jens, who's one of my best friends. But Winston, yes. Winston, I've been playing with since 2007. We met at CAP. And at that time, Winston had dreadlocks. And he played, I know,
what?
I know, imagine that. He had dreadlocks and he played like this big wooden electric Warwick bass that like usually like metal players, like funk kind of players play. It's like big and like really high action and hard to play. And I don't think it was until like second year he started playing the upright bass. So very different.
Which is now like his instrument.
Yeah, basically. So very different Winston back then.
Do you have pictures?
I probably do. I mean, everything's on Facebook.
Nice.
All the evidence is there.
Winston cannot run away from that. Then.
No.
Okay, nice.
He can walk, though, because he's a bass player. That's such a bad joke.
It's a dad joke. It's a good dad joke, yeah.
Yeah, I'm secretly a dad on the inside. Yeah.
And how did you, like, when did you decide, like, okay, let's do a band? And
so,
because you play very often, like, together, like, you know, like, so how did you, like, hey, I actually like this, you know, this style, like, the most, mm-hmm. or I feel more comfortable playing this the most? Like, mm-hmm. let's, you know, do a band, make a band.
So going into CAP was a really interesting thing because I came from this hot jazz vernacular and Capilano's music program is primarily bebop. So I felt a little bit like a fish out of water when I came in there. I'm like, oh, let's play Strut with some barbecue. And nobody has any idea what I'm talking about. They're like, no, we are going to play like, I don't know, like some Miles Davis or something, you know, like.
They're like, what?
No, we're going to play this Charlie Parker tune. I'd have no idea what that is. So it took like a little bit of adjusting for me to, and a lot of learning of tunes to like kind of feel like I really belonged there. But yeah, Winston and I would play in our, like they would have small ensembles mm-hmm. that you would do. And so we would play together quite often. And I was still regularly gigging with like the hot jazz stuff too and like leaving for festivals. And he's like, oh, it's kind of like cool what you're doing. I'm like, yeah, like, why don't you, like, we play jump well in. Together here. Like, why don't you come play with me playing this stuff? And it's, you know, the rest is kind of history. It worked really well. And, you know, he's such an adaptive person. He's such a great musician. I think it's just like he's so willing to listen and dig in and learn the music of that style. So
nice.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the, your growth in, you know, this in hot jazz has been like different depending on who you play with?
Definitely.
Like, or is it like more like, or not growth, maybe growth is the wrong word. But yeah, like, do you feel like, oh, I'm learning this new stuff, or I'm like, I'm teaching this, and then you learn something back by teaching something, you know, like.
Yeah.
Because you play with, like, different musicians.
Yeah,
so.
And I don't only play hot jazz as well. Like, a lot of my original music is kind of more modern sounding, different kind of harmonies and stuff like that. But I do think, at the end of the day, it really, like, that New Orleans kind of roots really just bleeds into everything I do. It's grows into everything I do. I think that's a nicer way of thinking of it. It's like if I play with someone like Joe Abbott, who is just so entrenched in this kind of music, like he lives it and breathes it and is always working on it. He's a great clarinetist. Him and I will just like, it just feels so, so natural when we play together because we know all the breaks and we know where all the stops are, you know, everything. Same thing with Jens. Like he really has played this music for like 20 years. So he really digs it. He really knows it. But a lot of the time, like I find if I'm playing that, I'm thinking less about what I'm doing. And so everything just is very organic.
Yeah.
And it can be very silly. And like quite often we'll have like some sort of mind meld where we actually play the exact same thing at the same time without really thinking about it, and then just start laughing. So when I'm in that setting, I think I probably grow a bit more because I'm not so worried about what I'm playing, and I can just like develop off of things. Yeah. When I'm in more of a teaching mode, I think it's more that I learn like, oh yeah, I never really thought about it this way sort of perspective. Okay. You know?
Yeah.
So if you're teaching songs to people and be like, oh, okay, here's the stop here. Whoops, sorry. I'm touching the microphone. And here's the stop. I'm like, oh right. Like I never actually have to think about this because I've done it for so long. Like, right. This is a thing you have to explain. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I totally forgot to do the cheers when we started. So, yeah, cheers. I totally forgot.
Delicious.
Have you ever tried this one?
I have not.
It's really good. It's one of my favorites. Favorite mezcales. They're really good. It's really good. I wanted to ask you as well, like when you sit down and do your own music, like to write your own songs, do you like have a kind of like a space dedicated to that? Do you have a like a ritual maybe you kind of follow to like get into that like headspace and like of writing and making your own songs? Is it like you're, you know, one day walking and then you're like, oh, like this is a great melody and I need to, you know, sit down now and write it?
Yeah.
Or is it like all of the above?
It's kind of like that is yes and.
Yeah.
That and.
Because you seem very spontaneous.
Yeah. I'm a pretty noisy person. And I'm usually humming or singing something to myself. Mm. And when I latch onto something that I really like, then I'm like, oh, I gotta write this down. And you like run and scribble and write it down. But then there's also times where I'm like, I have this idea about any time. Like I have a song called If I Were a Man. Mm. And there's no lyrics to this song, but the title, If I Were a Man, is like, well, how...
You've played that at Guild.
Yeah. And it's like, how do I translate that to a musical idea? So it went from ba-ba, ba-ba-ba, like, if I were a man. And then it turned into ba-ba, ba-ba-da.
Oh.
Yeah. Ba-da, ba-da-da, ba-da, da-da-da, da-da-da, ba-do, da-da-da. And that just kind of like... blossoms, right? So it's like, take these ideas. Or it's like one time I was walking out the door, I think I was heading to a gig, and I have a little pet budgie. He's awesome. And maybe he's also responsible for a lot of my musical growth, because before I had him, I never had like the radio or anything on. And like I would just intentionally listen to music. So I listened to a lot less music because it wasn't just on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got this little budgie during COVID, I was like, oh, it seems really mean to leave him in silence all day. So they're like little flock birds. They should have sound around. Like they're used to being with other birds. So I was like, well, maybe if I put the TV on. It's like, oh, radio or like
something where
music.
It's like
music.
And like talk and, you know.
Yeah,
like,
so I have different radio stations on, but all day long kind of for him. So at that time I had like a co-op radio station playing, and they were interviewing this woman who just released her book of poetry. And I wish I knew more of it, because I was kind of in one of those frantic, like, okay, I need this, and I'm gonna get out the door. And as I was walking out the door, they were talking about how she'd had her heart broken so many times, and she was leading into a poem she was about to read, but it was like the catalyst for it was her friend asking, like, do you believe in love anymore? Mm. And so I walked out the door with this thought, like, do you believe in love anymore, in my head? Mm. And it turned into this ballad that I kind of was playing with in my head while I was at this gig or whatever I needed to be at that time. And turned into this very moody, questioning ballad.
Mm-hmm.
So... it's like, yeah, I do sit down. I have a little space And Pepper, my bird, is like kind of to the right. So when I'm playing or writing, he's like so happy and he's singing. And it just makes the experience of writing like, oh, there's this cheerful creature that really likes what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Even if I don't like what I'm doing. So yeah, it's like sometimes.
Encouraging.
Yeah. So sometimes I'm just sitting there playing stuff and it'll come out that way. But a lot of the time, and I think the most genuine music that I write is stuff that I've just been churning around, tumbling around in my head while I'm out in the world.
And then you have
and
like,
then it's like, oh, this is like solidified in my head now. I just need to put it on paper. Yeah.
And okay. So I feel like how you have described like how you write a song, I feel like it's like from something very like concrete and then you sort of make it into this like abstract kind of like world, which is insane, and it's like fascinating. Do you think you have like I forgot his name, so there's this I can't believe I forgot his name, this, you know, world famous music composer that sort of does like for movies, and he does like these, he puts in like, I don't know how to describe it, like language between some of the songs, like he would give one character one kind of melody that he would then play along, like around that melody for like other scenes. So you would know that even though that character wasn't there, if you could hear like the like that character's own language, so to speak, you could sort of figure out that either that character was coming on or like, or something was, something like good or bad was going to happen. Cause it like, so do you feel like you do sometimes something like that with your, like, do you have like characters in your head that you like sort of give these, you know, like language or like, or is it more like I just have a melody about an idea, like I have an idea, I turn it into a melody and then I just develop it?
Yeah, it's a little bit of that. I don't know if it's, I guess each song kind of has their own character because I don't know if I write more songs about myself or about made up situations or characters.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
But do you give yourself, like if it's about yourself, do you give yourself your own? Do you think you have your own, like, I guess you do.
I guess I
mean, because it's your style. That would be your style.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, in some senses, when I'm writing songs, like, because I can be totally content and very, like, with that song, like, Do You Believe in Love Anymore? That's not about me. That was just something that inspired me. I was like, oh, that's like a great idea for a song. But I'm sure everyone has probably questioned themselves on that at some point.
Yeah.
But because I had heard it on the radio and I just like heard this woman's voice, I think when I was writing that song for sure, it was like imagining what this woman looked like, her character and like her situation. Cause I didn't really hear her whole interview. So yeah.
Yeah, you were like running and like.
Yeah, just like thinking, what would she be thinking? How would she be feeling? How would she be moving? Sitting, like how's her posture when you're contemplating something heavy like that? Are you sitting up straight or are you kind of slouched or leaning or sprawled on a couch? Just contribute to the tone of how I write the music. And I think like you're describing that idea of having a character or a sound that represents a character or represents a theme, very, very common in orchestral and operatic music, right?
Yeah.
So having that kind of music on in the day as well. So right now I'm on CBC and we get classical music all morning. So
nice.
Yeah, but it's like I'm listening to a lot more orchestral music and hearing all of what you're describing, those characters coming in and out and weaving themes throughout the music. Yeah. So I guess in some senses when I'm composing, I do have characters.
Like sometimes consciously, but sometimes it's just like part of like
maybe
the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes and no.
And have you ever had your Pepper? Have you ever had him like, no, I don't like that.
Sometimes. Sometimes he gets kind of cranky when I'm not paying attention. And like, because he's a very smart bird. For a budgie, he's a very smart bird, and he like picks up on stuff we say. So like he'll say like, "I love you, baby bird," no. things like that. "What you doing?" So I'm in the kitchen doing dishes. Like, "I'm washing dishes, Pep." So, but he likes attention a lot, and sometimes if I'm not playing with him or talking to him and I'm just focusing on something, I'll be playing and he'll be singing and singing, and then all of a sudden I'll hear this like bap, 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 bap. Like, "Oh, okay, sorry, I'm coming. I'll come pay attention to you. Sorry."
Aww. And have you ever had him like maybe kind of like give you a tune, like say something that you're like, "Oh, that kind of sounds like kind of cool"?
I don't know if I don't think so. Not yet. He's only three, though, so he needs to develop his vocabulary a little more.
Have you ever had, like, something like movement inspire you? Like someone – because I feel like, you know, like bebop and hot jazz and or, like, dance. Because, like, you have a big community of dancers.
Yes. Yes.
Which is great. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, I don't know if it holds true to you, but when, you know, some of the dancers are like, you know, coming up with some like crazy moves, mm-hmm. Do you ever get like, "Oh, that kind of, like, I'm watching it, but that kind of sounds something like this"? Like, are you sort of want to encourage like that kind of movement?
Yeah.
So you kind of like, I don't know, play a little bit like higher notes, or because you saw something like, I don't know.
Yeah. So on my very first record, I have this song called "Do Something Fancy." Mm. And there are two dancers in Vancouver, Claudia and Jackie. And they used to be like regulars at Guilt & Co. every single week back when it was like the Jen Hodge All-Stars. So this is like 10, 11 years ago.
Okay.
Man, I've been playing there for a long time. But they would come, and the two of them, when they dance together, I just feel like everything just escalates. Like, they're always like pushing the limits and trying more and trying more and trying more, and like, but in such a joyful way. Mm-hmm. There was one night where we just kept yelling like, "Do something fancy" to each other. And they would do like something amazing on the dance floor, and then they'd yell it at me, and I'd try and do some cool riff or something while I'm soloing. And so it was kind of going back and forth. So that interaction definitely inspired that song, "Do Something Fancy." And that song has lyrics about dancing. And yeah. But for sure, like when I'm playing for dancers, I'm watching them. I also play with tap dancers quite often, and that's a very different thing because it's so rhythmic. So it makes me think about,
because they're also doing music with their like their percussioning.
They're being percussive. Yeah, absolutely. So that makes me think less of a melodic way and more of a rhythmic way. How I can interact with them.
Nice. And do you ever like go back home and like after, like you mentioned right now for like "Do Something Fancy." sorry, but has it happened like again with other dancers when you went like home and you were like, "Oh, this riff was like really cool" after that interaction, and I totally want to, you know, develop another like song?
Yeah, maybe less about songs, but like because dance is inherently so rhythmic, right? Backgrounds, so little riffs that we do behind people soloing. So if they're doing like da 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 da, so then the horns are like ba boo ba boo da or bo bo do bo da. Like, you know, there's just like little different riffs we would do. Like, "Oh, I heard them do that, so now we're gonna do this rhythmic idea with notes or melody behind the next soloist." So I think it's more, that sort of thing is more on the fly and happens in the moment. And I think that's one of my favorite parts about playing with dancers or for dancers. Because when you're playing at like a jazz club, everybody's sitting there and they're having their cocktails or their dinner and they're listening to you, but you don't get that feedback in the same way. Yeah. Like I don't want to say
less interactive.
It's less interactive. I didn't want to say sterile, but it's not
like a communication, like a back and forth.
You're definitely, you know, putting on a conversation for a group of people and they're listening to you. So yeah, it's very like you're giving. And when you're playing with dancers,
it's a conversation.
It's, well, and it's just like this circuit, you know? It's like you give to them, but they're going to give back to you. And it's this really beautiful relationship. And I'm so appreciative of being able to play for dancers. It's like, you know, when you finish a song for a bunch of dancers and they just start screaming and clapping like crazy people. And it's just a wonderful energy to get back. And, you know, at a jazz club, you just get like,
yeah,
very nice. Good job. Yeah. And like both of those things are very different experiences and I love them both, but I would be very, very sad if I didn't have that relationship playing for the swing dance community.
Yeah. It's crazy. I feel like it's, and then they like, they, I don't know, they're like true followers, like, yeah. Which is so cool. Yeah. 'Cause it's also like, even for people who don't dance or play anything, as myself, it's just like super cool to watch, you know, like watching this, you know, back and forth is like, it's really cool. So yeah, it's, it makes you appreciate a lot, like, the fine arts.
Mm-hmm. I was saying to a friend, I have brunch with my friend Lucy quite often on Saturdays, and we were talking about how lucky I was to be a musician. I'm like, yeah. She's saying, every time I come here for brunch with you, because we usually go to second floor where there's music for the brunch show. Mm-hmm. Every time I come here, all the musicians are so nice, and they're so nice to you, but they're also so nice to me. And they have no reason to be nice to me other than the fact that they're nice people. And she's like, you're really lucky to be in this community where you're surrounded by really nice people. Mm-hmm. And I think about that, like, yeah, all the musicians I play with are really awesome people,
like really nice. Yeah.
And all of the dancers that I get to interact with are really nice people. Mm. Like, I think it's one of those things where if you're dancing with somebody and you're not a nice person, you're not probably going to last in that community very long, because it's just so intimate, right? You're so close with that person. They're not pleasant to be around. Like, probably not going to get danced with very much. Yeah.
You're going to get turned away a lot. Yeah.
So it's like, I think the same thing with creating music. It's like, it's very intimate. You're bearing a bit of your soul. So you want to be around people that you feel good doing that with.
And when did you decide to go to CAP? Like, why did, like, you've mentioned how, you know, growing into, like, playing in your high school band and, like, fostered the love for it, for playing music. But when were you like, okay, now I have to, like, want to, you know, take it a step further and, you know, get, you know, this whole knowledge in theory?
So growing up, I did the Royal Conservatory piano method. So did that, and also did the accompanying theory and all of that sort of stuff. And I think maybe it was like in grade 2 or 3, we had this homework assignment and it was, what do you want to be when you grow up? And when I brought it home, I was like, okay, well, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'm like, an Egyptologist. And she was like, okay, you don't want to play music? And I was like, what do you mean, play music? Because I was just like a little kid taking music lessons.
Like, right? I already play music.
I already play music. She's like, yeah, but like, you know, you could do something like Mrs. Dewar. You could teach music. And I'm like, hold on, lady.
Wait a minute.
That's a job you can do. And people are going to give you money. If I practice, people are going to give me money for this? Are you kidding me? You know, like the little wheels in my little like grade 2 brain are just turning and like, oh my God, this is what I'm doing. And from that point forward, it was like that was always the path. And so when I got into grade 12, it was never, what are you going to explore for post-secondary, like what do you want to do? It was always like, what music school are you going to?
Okay.
And I'm very lucky to have super supportive parents who could push me and encourage me
and not be like, you have to be an accountant.
No, that was never an option. So I settled on CAP. I shouldn't say settled on. I chose CAP. It was close to home, so I could still get back to Chilliwack and see my family. It had a great musical reputation and was like one of the best music schools in Western Canada. I had really no interest in moving to the other side of the country mm-hmm. and being far away from everybody. So mm-hmm. that was the choice. And I'm very glad that I did my post-secondary.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it's a lot really, out of that program.
It's really funny that you said that you wanted to be an Egyptologist.
Yeah.
Because that's something that I also wanted to when I was like little, which is kind of, but it's like, it's really, like I didn't know you could be an Egyptologist. I think I remember we were like, I don't know how old I was. I was like, and I've already mentioned this on the podcast, but whatever. I've never met anybody else who has wanted to be an Egyptologist. I was like 9 or something. And then we had like this lady come in, because by that time I was like, I want to be a paleontologist. And then I was like, no, I want to be an archaeologist. And I wanted to discover like the Atlantis, you know. And then I thought like, oh, no, so the Atlantis doesn't really, it's just more like, you know, myth or, you know. And then this lady came in to give us a talk or whatever in school. And not many people showed up, but I showed up because I was like, she's an Egyptologist? Like, what? What does that? I don't. Like, how is that possible? And yeah, and then I sat through her, you know, her talk, and it was really cool. And I was like, I really want to be an Egyptologist. Yeah. And then that faded away. But I was like, yeah, I really, I don't know. I feel like it's very specific. Yeah. Well, it is. It is very specific.
I think for me, it was like I had these two teachers in my elementary school who had gone and lived in Egypt for 3 years or something like that. Okay. And like they probably had a reason other than just going to live in Egypt, but they came back and they were sharing all of this information, and they would weave little bits of Egypt into like all of our stuff. And like we learned how to write our names in hieroglyphs or something similar to our names in hieroglyphs, and like, oh, we're going to do this project, and like this little like something to do with Egypt works into like the math lesson, you know? Yeah. And it was just like, oh, this is so cool. I want to do this all of the time. And then like, of course, like little kid, like going to the library and like checking out all of the books on Egypt. And like, okay, this in my trumpet. I guess I didn't have a trumpet at that time, but this in my backpack, and it's like 100 pounds of like Egypt books.
Yeah. I bought like books on Cleopatra and because I was just like, oh my God, like this is amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really funny. So I got really sidetracked with that because I was like, she wanted to be an Egyptologist, me too. And so now So what are you planning now for like music-wise?
Oh, just total global domination. Hot jazz for everyone. Yeah. No.
I'm going to make everybody dance to eternity and nobody can complain. Everyone's going to have a great time. Yeah,
you all have to dance
time.
And have fun.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. You're welcome. Yeah.
So in January, I'm planning to record my next album.
Oh, nice.
So that's super exciting. In February, I'm doing Jazz at the Bolt, which is a festival kind of curated by Corey Weeds, who does the programming at Frankie's. So that will be a great festival. I'm really looking forward to hearing everybody play at that. It's always just great high level of music. So excited for that. And then April, I'm doing a Western Canadian tour.
Wow.
Yeah.
So very busy.
It's a very busy.
A very busy schedule.
I'm hoping for fall 2024 to also do a tour in Europe. So, some big goals. But, you know, done all this stuff before, pre-COVID. So it's just remembering how to do
how
it. You know, 4 or 5 years later.
Nice. So you've already toured in Europe then?
Yes.
And
yes.
How's that? Do you feel like the crowd is, are they less dancey?
No, there's more dancey.
Nice.
I think more dancey. Well, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Or different dancey.
Because I do play like a mix of jazz clubs and swing dances, but the easiest way for me to schedule a tour is by booking through the swing dance community. So like I said, all the people that I meet through the dance community are just so nice. And so when I'm like, hey, I'm trying to do this in Europe, can you put me in touch with any folks who organize dances there?
And they're like, sure.
And they're like, oh yeah, sure. Like I know like this person, and like lists off like 10 people. And so you like just cold call these people and you're like, hey, I got your name from so-and-so, I'm Bonnie, and I'm going to bring my band, here's my EPK, here's my music, what I'm planning on presenting, you know, I would love to come. And quite often they're like, yay, let's make new music to dance to. Let's make it. I feel like Kermit there. New music. You know, let's figure out how to make this work. And yeah, and then I just root it. And I'm like, oh, sorry, I know we said this date, but if I go here, then I come here. Can we move that like a week later? They're like, we don't normally do a dance on that day, but yes, we will help you out.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So then after I've kind of got those like anchors in place, I'll reach out to like a jazz club that has more of a fixed schedule, mm-hmm. and be like, okay, I'm going to be nearby on this date. Is there anything open that I can get into?
Yeah. Which is the country with like the best crowd? Would you consider like from Europe?
Well,
you're like, well, Canada over like in Europe. Do you have like a, like, or something that you're like, whoa, that's new and that's super crazy and super cool?
I think Austria.
Oh,
like for playing for dancers, I've had the best time in Austria. I play, there's this one dance.
Austria's so beautiful. It's like so perfect.
It's like, it's like princess land.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
it's
totally.
Like castles and
totally
stones, cobblestones, and like beauty everywhere.
Yeah, and everything's lit like so perfectly, and it's like, yeah. I mean, a lot of Europe is like that, but like Austria is like, I feel like that's my impression of Austria. Just like everything's so like, I don't know.
Yeah,
like perfect almost.
There's one dance we play there, and it's like a big paddle wheeler boat, and it goes down the Danube.
Oh,
it's like the first time I played it, I'm like, is this really my life? Am I really doing this right now? Like, I'm playing hot jazz on a boat going down the Danube in Austria.
Wow,
my life is so cool. 16-year-old me would be so stoked right now. Yeah.
Wow, that sounds, do you have like videos? You should like
I think, yeah. I do, yeah. Yeah, I have to dig them up, but yeah, I have some video of like playing.
You should have someone like shoot a video of like you playing, and you know, well, unless you don't play on a boat again, but like anyway, like
either,
yeah, that would be really cool. Nice.
Yeah.
And were people dancing as well there?
Yeah. And like another really cool venue that I played in Vienna was this dance hall that had been made under like what was their, similar to SkyTrain. And oh, so yeah. It's like this big, huge pillar that I guess the downstairs of it served as a bomb shelter.
Oh, okay.
And they've turned it into this dance venue. So it's very cool. Like the upper level is just this cafe that's kind of this big pillar that's holding up the SkyTrain.
Mm-hmm.
And then underneath is this like, feels like almost a secret swing dance club.
Yeah, like a big speakeasy.
Yeah, you go down these stairs and then you just like come into this big room and they've got a sprung dance floor and a stage and curtains and everything.
Wow.
Yeah, really cool. Very good turnout and people are just so excited and enthusiastic and, you know, it's just a nice feeling to play for people who are giving that back.
And have you played with musicians there? Like musicians from there?
Yeah.
Okay,
so
nice. How's that experience? Like, do you feel like it's...
So
different, or I guess it is different, but like, yeah, like, do you learn something from it? Like, do you take things like, oh, they have a very different perspective on this, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, or they play this chord. Everybody plays this chord instead of this chord that we play. It's like, oh, they play this as an augmented, and we play this as some other chord, you know. So with Company B, we did a tour through China.
Wow.
I've been very lucky to play in a lot of really cool places.
Yeah.
But we've been to China twice, and I want to say the second time we toured there, we met a band that is through this festival, and so most of the bands stay local and they play at a couple venues. We were in the touring group where they would take us around Jiangsu province.
Mm-hmm.
And so the band that we ended up connecting with, they were staying in Nanjing. And we had planned to go and do a tour through Europe afterwards. And there was like a baggage handler strike in Ireland where we were supposed to go first. And we were just like offhandedly telling them like, oh yeah, we're supposed to go here afterwards, but
maybe we won't work out.
Yeah, we need to like find somewhere to stay. And they're like, oh, just come to Belgium and stay with us. Like, just like that. They like met us for like 15 minutes and they're like, oh, you guys are cool musicians. Just come to Belgium and sit because you have a gig here and it'll get you there. Like,
just like it'll be fine.
Just you don't worry about getting to Ireland because you can't get there. Come stay with us. We have a big house. Come stay with us.
Nice.
And so then you like hanging out in this house full of musicians and jamming and being like, okay, do you know this tune? Yeah, I know this tune. So you're playing along and then all of a sudden like a couple of the chords are a little bit different and you go like, oh, that's a really cool way to play that I never thought of.
Like thought of, oh, yeah. Nice. Wow, it's crazy. I feel like do you have any like funny stories from like...
From China.
From being surrounded by like random musicians, but really cool musicians.
I mean, touring through China was mind-boggling, you know. So we had a translator, which was a necessity, but even just like pulling in, because the idea with the touring group was to bring jazz to communities, small farming communities of a million people that hadn't been exposed to that type of music before. So it was a bit of an outreach kind of thing. And so
what was that like?
Very crazy. It was very like mind-boggling, like I said, because like we would get in and some of these people have never listened to jazz music before. And so you can see like the wheels kind of turning and being like, what? Like, I like this. And they're trying to figure out
like what is this.
And but like, then also like playing in these sort of remote communities where they've never seen a white person before, like in person. Oh, right?
yeah.
And so I was walking down the street and like just
minding
my own business and checking things out, and I'm sure I stick out like a sore thumb. 5'9" white girl just gallivanting down the street
with a wooden case and a trumpet.
You know, and I had people running up to me and I thought I was getting mugged. And I was like, here, take my phone, take my money. And they're like, no, like it's like no, like they wanted to take a picture with me. What? And I was just like, you know, because my heart's like, take all my stuff, take it all.
So there's probably...
And then I'm just like, oh, you want to take my...
Picture?
Picture? I mean, sure. Okay, great. I can keep my phone.
So there's probably a few pictures of you or like in some, you know, random place in China of you just like kind of scared.
Like shell shocked.
Yeah, like I thought I was going to be mugged. Yeah. But I'm not.
Everything's okay. Yeah. Or just like...
Did you have those people like that weren't exposed to that music like try to dance to it even though they hadn't heard it? Like, did you feel
you
like
could
they
see
were kind of
like kind of swaying? Because a lot of them were like these theaters, so it was seated.
Okay.
So there wasn't really anywhere to get up and dance, but you could see them kind of like, oh, okay. And by the request of the festival director, we learned this traditional song called Nanny Wan. And so we sang it in three-part harmony.
Wow.
In Cantonese. And they lost their minds because they were not expecting that at all, right?
I got goosebumps. Wow. Yeah. That's so cool. Do you still know that song? Like,
no. It's been like 5 years. I'm sure if I like listened to it and worked on it a little bit, it would come back pretty quickly. Mm. But yeah, that one slipped away.
Yeah, that's so cool. Wow, that's so cool. And then, you mentioned in January you're recording a new album. Do you already have the songs then, I guess?
More or less. I think I've got like 85%. I think there's maybe two more that I'm...
Still
unsure. Maybe I might write some new music. Just, I think about having a record and how I want the songs to flow through it. And if I don't have something that I really love that fits a role in a certain spot, I'm not going to put something I'm not super excited about in. I also want it to be all original music. So while there's like stuff I perform that's other people's music, I'd like it to be all my original kind of creation. So I was up in Whitehorse about a month ago to do some recording work with my friend Claire Ness. She's just about to put out a record. And so I had a couple days off where I could sit away from everything in Vancouver. And like, I had no responsibility to do anything or be anywhere. I was just in this Airbnb in Whitehorse. And I guess I could have gone out and like sightsaw or whatever, but I'm like, no, this is like actually really valuable time where I can think about what I want this record to be. So I kind of came up with this idea of it being like the Fool, the tarot card.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's like, and because I have a song called The Fool, but it had nothing to do with the tarot card. But I was like looking up like Google image searching things that would come up for the different song titles I had. And The Fool came up as a tarot card. And I was like, oh, like dig into this a little bit more. And it's a sign of like new beginnings and like leaping in faith without knowing what's on the other side of the cliff kind of thing. And I was like, oh, this is like kind of a beautiful imagery for a record.
Yeah. And kind of perfect for it to be recorded on like in January as well, you know, like. Yeah. So it's kind of cool. Yeah.
So then with the songs that I'd chosen, some of them I was like, okay, this doesn't actually fit into this vision anymore. So I want to make something that does fit a little bit better and flows through. Yeah.
Are they all, like, do they all have lyrics or no?
No, not all of them. Yeah. About half, I think.
When do you decide, like, I want lyrics to go into this? Is it more because, like, you came up with the lyrics? Like, are those songs the ones that you were like, oh, I came up with the lyrics before the melody?
Sometimes, yeah. I think it's like, if I, in the process of writing a song, it will get lyrics if it's meant to have lyrics.
Yeah.
If it's meant to have lyrics, it won't be finished until it has lyrics. But some of them, I think, are stronger and say without words what I'm trying to get across just musically. So I don't think I've ever gone in and added words to anything that I just wrote as an I don't think so. So yeah, it's like write it, it has words, or it doesn't. That's the end of it.
Yeah. Is there like but is it more like a feeling like, no, this one has to, like, or is there like another kind of,
like, I think if it's gonna have words, I probably have them kind of rolling away in my head before I sit down to put it on paper. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I was like, how does it, like, how does it work? Like, do you decide it because it's like I want two songs with lyrics, or like, but no. So it's more like, it's this song deserves lyrics, or this song,
or the song
doesn't.
Just is this song?
Yeah, not deserves. Lyrics. Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's, yeah. Like,
this is my expression of this feeling, and I'm gonna use my mouth in words to describe
it.
This word is my expression of this feeling or emotion, but it's coming through my instrument without words.
And when you're writing like your songs, do you like grab the trumpet first, or do you sit on the piano?
Depends on the song.
Okay.
Depends on the song. Yeah. It's sometimes it's me like at a gas station pumping gas and like singing something and being like, oh, this is what this is. And sometimes it's like, all right, sit down at the piano. I think most of the time it's like I sit down at the piano and probably
like play around the. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you record yourself like doing, I don't know, like do, do,
I
do,
do or whatever? But it's never very successful. Like, because I don't have the context. Like, I'm like, what?
What was that?
Is this note I'm starting on the third of the key or the fifth of the key? So like when I first started doing that, I would just like sing something and be like, all right, what chord was this supposed to go with? Like what key am I in? Like I know what notes I'm singing. I can put that down. But like what was my intention for this? And so it's like I go back and like because I have voice notes and I like to record myself telling jokes as well. If you're ever sad, it's really great because if you're ever sad, you can go through your voice memos and be like, oh, it's like I have this weird song. I don't know what it is. And here's another really bad joke. And like, oh, here's like the grocery list I was supposed to remember and didn't. Yeah. But it's very, it cheers you up, you know.
Nice. You are a very joyful person. So
I try to
be. I guess like that does make sense to have like your own like, you know, jokes. Even though if they're bad, whatever, it's like you're still going to laugh because you're like, oh, that was so bad.
Yeah. Oh, I was like, oh, what a horrible delivery.
Nice. Can you tell us a little bit about your like your first album? Like how did that... Like, how did you decide, like, okay, now I have a full album. I'm going to write about my first album. I'm going to write my first album.
Yeah, my first record. So I have two records out. I have two records and an EP. And my very first record was a bunch of, like, it wasn't as thoughtful as everything that came after. It was just like, it's time to put out a record. Okay. You know, I had recorded with other bands that I'd been in at that time, at previously. So that hot jazz band that I was in high school, I think we like recorded two albums in our band room, you know? Okay. And we would burn discs and like make covers for them and make jewel cases for them and like nice. Sell them at our gigs, you know, for $5.
Do you still have one of those?
I'm sure my parents do. I know at one point my mom had like my high school band CD like in her SUV and she'd listen to it when she'd drive to work and it's so cute. I don't know if she has any more, but they probably do have them somewhere, or maybe up in a box in my bedroom at my parents' place. You know, they're somewhere. But yeah, I'd put out albums with other ensembles and I'd been a side person on a lot of records by that point. And it was just kind of like,
so we weren't really nervous or anything. It was more like, I just got to do my stuff
now. Yeah. It's like, it's time. It's time to like put out a record. You're at this point in your career where you need to make the choice if you're going to be a band leader and put out content, or if you are content being a side person, because you know, that's totally fabulous. It's a lot less responsibility. Mm-hmm. You can kind of just show up and have fun and you're not in charge of anything, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, this is the point where I need to step into being a strong band leader and put out content and pursue stuff under my own name.
Yeah.
Gotta make something of myself. And so I did that album in a very unconventional way where I rented a hall, like a dance hall.
Oh.
And set up all this baffling around the hall, and the whole record was recorded live off the floor without the vocals. So live off the floor is like everybody plays all at one time. For anybody who doesn't know,
I didn't know. So yeah, perfect.
Yeah,
I was like,
so
I didn't
if
know.
You listen to a pop record, chances are the way they'll record it
it's
is
like one
they
one,
record one. Everything first, and they call that like the scratch track, and then you go in and you put your individual ones on top of that one by one, so you can kind of get it really, really polished and really, really perfect. But when you're playing jazz, you don't necessarily, I mean, you want it to be polished and you want it to sound clean, but you know, you want that interpersonal connection, right? You want everybody to feel like they're playing together, not playing to a track.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which makes makes a lot of sense for like jazz. So, cause it's pretty much how it's been. Yeah, I guess that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so you rented that.
So I rented a hall rather than doing it in the studio, which is where most sane people record. And
your first one. So.
And my very first one, I was like, no, we're doing this like wild. So yeah, rented this hall, rented it for 2 days, I think, and set up all this baffling. And when we ran out of baffling, we grabbed like the 8-foot tables that they had and like set them up and like made baffling by draping like big blankets over top of them, so that there was some separation for the microphones, so that all the sound isn't bleeding into everything else.
Yeah.
But then we also got the sound of the room, which is what I really wanted, because that music is made to be played in that room. In a hall. And like the thing that didn't really get taken into consideration is like when you're playing that music in that room is usually filled with bodies.
So it also like, changes the, yeah.
Yeah. The temperature of the room is warmer because it's filled with bodies. And, you know, like there's just like all these little things that, you know, change the way something sounds. So I think it was a really cool experience, and I did a bunch of research into like what equipment I needed and what sound gear I wanted to use and what vocal mic was going to sound the closest to like an old record that I really liked. And so like went then did like the long McQuaid run and be like, okay, I want this and I want this and I want this and I want this. And they'd be like, oh, well, we have this and this and this, but we don't have this. And
I'd be like, oh, can you get it?
Okay, I got to do, hang on, I'm just going to do some research on my phone here, you know, and trying to figure out what I could get instead. And yeah, and then like had everything set up, had an engineer in the hall and did all the recording there, and then recorded the vocal tracks afterwards, I think in just like a basement suite, somebody's living room kind of thing. And I think it came out pretty good. And then my second record was done at a studio with, you know, all the proper stuff and sounds completely different. And I love them both.
Well, I guess they both have, I mean, yeah, they both have their own story and their mm-hmm. own, like, you know, decision, like, and thought process behind them. So that's pretty cool, though. Yeah, you did it in a hall, which is kind of, yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, a little outside the box.
Because it does make sense. It's like, yeah, that music is, you know, meant to be played in those spaces. Mm-hmm. So why not record it where it's meant to be played?
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. And also, like, even if you would have had bodies there, like, it's still kind of like, I don't know. I don't know how that would have worked. Out, like, having
you would
that
get like the background. Like, one of my very favorite records is Sinatra at the Sands.
Oh,
it's like with the Count Basie Orchestra,
and you can hear all the
the glasses clinking, yeah, people laughing at the jokes, yeah. and all the banter between the songs. That was one of the best lessons I ever had in showmanship, was like listening to Frank Sinatra talk between songs and be like, oh.
Like, this, right.
This is how you connect with an audience. This is how you present, you know. It's not just about playing the music. It's also about connecting with people.
Who are listening to.
Who are listening, or dancing or whatever. But it's like, you know, they want to feel like they know you. They want to feel like your friend. And I want them to feel like my friend. Like, gotta have fun and we gotta talk to each other. You can't just, like, blast trumpet at your face and be friends.
And then be like, okay, bye.
Yeah, okay, that's all. Bye.
Thank you for coming, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. I'm really happy that you came here. You have, like, an amazing, like, trajectory and career. And I love watching you perform at Guild. I've only seen you play there. That's a lie. I did see you play at a speakeasy. I forgot the name.
Oh, was it Lauai?
Yes, that one.
Yeah, on piano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see you play there. That was like last year, I think.
Yeah.
So it's the two places that I've seen you play. But I am really looking forward to see you like play in other places, because I know you still like do your own things and like festivals. And so next year, because you're going to be busy, I'm probably going to be there.
Ah,
yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. do you want to leave like your social media tags?
Yeah. So on Facebook and on Instagram. Oh, no, that's a lie. They're different. On Facebook, I'm Bonnie James Dio. Because I think that's really funny, even though it's not my name. Like Ronnie James Dio, Bonnie James Dio. I don't know. Yeah. On Instagram, I am Bonnie Northgraves. Yeah. And then any kind of web searches, my website is just bonnienorthgraves.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Well, thank you for coming.
Thanks
here.
For having me. That was so
fun. Yeah.
What a great way to start the day.
Yeah. you are like a very joyful person. It's really contagious and it's really nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Looking forward to your next album.
Me too.
So, yeah. Cheers.
Cheers
with this one.
Yeah. At the end.
Yeah.